Blog Talk Radio.
We're a nation of haters under their control. Rise up everybody and burn down the system. Pay up the exit poll. Wake up the silence.
Everybody, and this is Steven Zimmer calling out live from the Star Chamber Show. This is episode number 18, and thank you once again to Zero King for the bump in music there, and or lead in music there. And tonight we got a great show coming up for you. And but first, you know, of course, we got our gang of co-hosts tonight, and tonight with us is Selah Janelle. We have Michael West, and we have Alexander Brown, the rascal himself. But we are going to just cover a few things, and we'll be getting into our awesome guests from tonight. We're delving into the world of Southern haunts once again with author Linda DeLeon. But we'll be getting to her in just a few minutes. Coming off this weekend, well, first of all, actually, I just got back from Pete's Walk just a short while ago, and I got an appropriate fortune cookie. Actually, it applies very well to authors. I got one that said, "Man can fail many times, but he isn't a failure until he gives up." And I was just thinking in terms of the author world of, you know, we have to deal with so many rejections and disappointments and things like that along the way. So I thought I would pass that one on. I thought it was quite appropriate for writers especially. But once again, a man can fail many times, but he isn't a failure until he gives up. And, of course, you know, obviously applies to men and women alike. And but definitely some more wisdom from the walk I got. And as I open a nice can of Monster Energy and start the night. But coming off this weekend, we had a great event in Evansville, Indiana. Went to EvilCon, and I wanted to pass it over to Selah to talk about her experiences because she did a book launch there, which included a big library appearance where there was standing room only because every seat was taken up, and she actually sold out of all her books at that library event and then continued to have a really strong weekend. But she tell us about your adventures this past weekend.
Well, I had a blast at EvilCon, and I want to thank John B. Schmidt Soper for, you know, having me there as a special guest, and the entire stuff at EvilCon was wonderful. I grew up in the Evansville, Mount Vernon area. I went to school at the University of Southern Indiana, and I hadn't been back for, like, 12 years. So for me, it was really cool. I actually went back early and kind of haunted the streets a little bit and got reacquainted with some people in the area, and the con itself was just so much fun. I mean, I had never done an anime convention before, and there were so many, you know, warm people who were interested in reading, interested in books. You know, I feel like all our panels were really great. We had people come up to the table after the panels asking us questions. You know, there was so much interest in, you know, what do you do for writing certain genres, and how do you get published, and what do you need to look out for? It was a lot of fun. I'm really, really glad I did it, and it was really emotional to go to the Alexandrian because, oh my gosh, I feel like I grew up there. Like, I participated in so many after-school groups and so many different activities. You know, I had made a paper mache giant statue of the Arthur character from the children's books with a group of kids that stood there, like, forever. And that library was so much a part of my growing up, and to launch a book there and with people that I had, you know, grown up with and who had, you know, babysat me or who I had gone to high school with, it was, oh man, I was a wreck in a good way. It was a great great time. And that was also really special because I got to talk about a couple of the books I had actually, you know, read for the first time at that library. And I think they inspired my book Old School a lot, or at least inspired, you know, my love of fairy tales and kind of in a roundabout way inspired the book. So it was a really, really great time, just a great weekend. And I can't wait to go back there and do more stuff in the area.
Well, I can definitely say that, yeah, the response to Salem was fantastic. And, yeah, we made some great friends. Big shout-out to Rebecca, our very artistically talented friend who was a neighbor of ours in the vendor hall area. And, and she was really cool and met a lot of really, really great people there. And, yeah, I mean, it was a lot of fun. I mean, and we actually got to indulge in the world of Denny's too, which was cool.
Yeah, I dragged everyone to Denny's like every night because we don't have it here in Southern Ohio. At least where I'm at, we don't. So I definitely ate many, many meals at Denny's.
Yeah, I discovered that the cinnamon pancakes are just incredible.
Oh, man, amazing. That's amazing. Yeah, that's good con food right there.
Yeah, we had one of our fellow SSP family authors, John Allen, out there promoting the God Killers, and he actually sold out of all the books he brought with him. So
he did.
Yeah,
he had a
pretty successful weekend as well. And
yeah,
we had a lot of fun.
Well, after you guys had packed up, I hung around a little bit and I spent the night in Mount Vernon. But yeah, I definitely had people asking me like, when are we going to be back and what are we going to do next? So we definitely like. Yes, there will be more in that area because they just treated us really, really well.
Yeah, it was a small group, you know, author-wise, because beyond us on the panels, the only other panelist that was with us on the panels was actually just Shane Moore, who
right.
now owns
well,
New Babel Books.
It's the first year for a lit track.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah. we had a small group with us, but it was really, I mean, as far as the fans go, I mean, yeah, I could tell that they were really into it. And what Sayla said is true. I mean, we at the booth, I mean, definitely. I mean, I know I talked to a few individuals for quite a bit regarding questions
mm-hmm.
and so forth. So, yeah, that was definitely one of the cool things.
Yeah, I had people stopping me at the con
up.
And stuff. It was great.
That was awesome. And, yeah, and as far as Michael, what have you been up to as far as the Hades Disciples world? Because I know you're closing in on the finish line here.
Oh yes, we've been doing edits this week and getting it all whipped into shape, tightening up some of the action, some of this, you know, I've been working on this book for quite a while, and so reading through it again, you know, some especially the first half of it, it was all kind of new again in a way. And it's really coming together well. So I'm really excited for the fans to be able to get a hold of it. And I want to thank all the faithful readers out there who made Vampires Don't Sparkle, which is a cancer benefit anthology, a best-selling anthology last week, and it's still in the top 100 right now.
Yeah, we've been having a little string of some pretty good news with some of the chart positions on some of the latest things. I mean, obviously we had the massive news when you hit, you know, the top five in horror, the entire horror genre, and then you were number one in the occult horror category, Sim as Shadows, and then of course Alex Adams or D.A. Adams, you know, hit the top 10 in the fantasy genre, and then you had Vampires Don't Sparkle, as you just said, that charted, and then Jen Mulvihill hit 10th in steampunk, and this past weekend while we were at EvilCon, I found out that Writer's Workshop actually hit number one in writing skills. And
don't forget that Shake Your Chart in folklore either. That was pretty great too.
Well, no, I'm not forgetting it, not at all. And we're not done yet. I mean, we got some ongoing stuff, which you know, I got to do a shameless plug. But Hellscapes is now available for 99 cents. And Eric Garrison's Four Till Late and R.J. Sullivan with Haunting Obsession. Those three are definitely up right now for 99-cent specials. And then we do have some more coming up here very shortly with some really good anthos, Perfect Flaw, The End Was Not the End, and then both volumes of The Thunder on the Battlefield anthology, both Sword and Sorcery, will be offered. So that's going to be pretty cool stuff. We'll have to see how that goes. And then, oh, yes, Alex, you charted too. You charted too, didn't you, Alex?
Yeah, I did. It was, what, number four?
I believe it was in the top five for short
story horror. Yeah, and that was for the first Southern Haunts, Spirits That Walk Among Us. And I just want to take this time to thank all of our readers, and I want to thank all of the writers who contributed and everyone who has ever picked up that book and supported it. Thank you so much.
Yeah, so obviously it's been a big march. I mean, oh, sorry. Go ahead.
Well, no, I was just going to say this is how great Sayla is, because she not only charted, but she helped discover a chart that was heretofore unknown on Amazon, which is that.
I invented that chart. Are you kidding me?
She's perfect for the chart. Yeah.
See, that's how good the book is. It's just the charts are made for it.
But hey, I mean, you know, I mean, it's been a good run so far in March. I mean, this is a big month for us. I mean, we really pushed hard. We had a lot of advertising and promotions going on. And one of the big things is something that's kept Mike and I on our seat for like a week, as we keep waiting for them to actually put the new issue of Fangoria on the shelf in some of our local bookstores. I'm still waiting.
It's the only time you'll ever probably see Scarlett Johansson and me together, so it'll be worth picking up once it comes out.
Now, I've been told that tomorrow it should be out at here at Lexington, Joseph Beth Booksellers, so they said it should be on the shelf tomorrow. So, you know, it didn't go out Monday, but it should be out tomorrow. So, yeah, I'm definitely going to be stopping by, and hopefully I'll snap off a pic, and if I get that on Facebook. Yeah, I will definitely post that to Facebook as soon as I get a chance to get a photo of them, and I'm probably going to take a picture right there on the newsstand.
Well, the wife and I went to a movie at one of the art houses here in town, and it was on the opposite end of, you've got the art house on one end of the mall, and then you've got the whole mall, and then you've got a street, and then Barnes & Noble is on the other side. So we had some time to kill before the movie, so she goes, well, what do you want to do? I said, well, let's walk over to Barnes & Noble and see if the new Fang goes out. So we walked all the way across the mall, walked outside, walked all the way across the street, walked over there. I walked in, saw that it wasn't out yet, and I said, okay, we can go now.
A subscriber should have it.
She wasn't too happy with me.
Yeah, the subscriber should have it, because don't they usually get the magazine about a week ahead of the street, roughly?
I've been going on the website because when I go on the website, it still has the March issue up. So I figure when it flips over to the April issue on the website, that means that it's out in stores.
Yeah, they can't hold off too much longer. They got to go to April at some point here.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
it won't be too much
otherwise
longer.
They'll be selling the April issue in May. So.
Right. So, hopefully that'll get going here. But, yeah, it's been just a crazy month. I mean, with all the conventions, and, I know Michael with Horrorhound and us with, EvilCon and Mid-South Con and things like that. And, Alex was at Mid-South Con. And just a crazy month as far as everything. So we had all these new releases, like Sayla's book and Alex with Southern Haunts 2. We had all these conventions, all these promotions. I mean, it's just looking back on March, I actually was doing that today, and I was like, oh, my God, look what what do we take on in March? So, yeah, it's good that we're still here.
We probably did a year's worth of work in March. We did a year's worth of work in March.
Yeah. It came in and went out like a lion, that's for sure.
Yeah, definitely. So it's going well. So, but tonight we actually are continuing on a little longer than the Southern Haunts theme, and I'm gonna turn it over to you, Alex, because I know you're very particularly excited about, as we're all excited about tonight's guest, but I know that you in particular, I know, would like to probably give her the introduction, but I'm going to give the mic to you for that. So there you go, man.
All right, awesome. Thank you. Well, tonight we have a really special guest. Her name is Linda DeLeon, and I had the pleasure of reading her book, Veil of Time, which is a historical vampire romance fiction action novel. So it's all rolled into one here. I have not had the opportunity to read the sequel, which is also a prequel to the first book called Fall into Darkness. But after I read Veil of Time, I knew that I wanted Linda to be a part of the Southern Haunts family. And when she submitted to Southern Haunts Volume 2, I really had no idea what type of story to expect from her, because with her novel, she showed such great diversity. And that was in the matter of chapters over a long book. And pretty much when I received her short story, it still had a great amount of diversity, but it was true to what a short story should be. And I was really surprised at the end of it actually had some dark humor. So I would like to go on and welcome Linda Daly on to our show. Are you with us, Linda?
I'm here.
Awesome. How are you doing tonight?
I'm okay. How are you?
Oh, I am surviving it. Now, with your writing career, you have a very interesting story on how your first novel came to be. It was a dare, I believe. Could you enlighten us about how Veil of Time came to be?
Okay, well, my day job, or night job it was, because I was night shift as an RN, I was working in the emergency room at one of the hospitals in Jackson, and the nurses were just discussing Twilight, and I said, I bet I could write like that, and I had never tried, and they said, no, you can't, and they kept on until I got mad. And they dared me, and that's how it started. And actually, the villain in the first two books is named Vanessa, and it's named after the girl that dared me to write, Vanessa Tillman, and she's still in Jackson. So I made her the evil vampire.
So after the books were published, did you say, hey, here's my book and you're in it?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, she knew it from the beginning and she loved it.
Awesome. So we can say that because of that, dare, you gave us a really wonderful piece that I actually believe teenagers, I'd say maybe about 15, 16 and up, could really enjoy this as well. Did you intentionally write this book for it to be suitable for the teenage crowd in the later years, such as 15 and higher into adult?
Honestly, I wrote it. I tried to keep it clean because my son is now 18, but he was 15 when I was writing it, 14 or 15. And I honestly didn't want to embarrass him, so I tried to keep it clean so he could hold his head up and wouldn't be picked up about, you know, his mama writing a smutty book. So that's why I kept it clean. And the kids of all ages like it. I've had people come to my book signing and buy it for their 9-year-olds, to all the way to grown people. Actually had a student in Vicksburg, Mississippi, do her book fair board on Fall into Darkness and made a pretty good grade on it. I think she's in 7th grade.
Oh, wow, that's awesome. Mm-hmm. I know that when you have someone come up to you and say, well, we're doing a book report on you, which I've actually had that before with some of my more intense work, I'm actually surprised they got away with reading it. But it's that feeling of saying, wow, they're reviewing me to the class. And it's just a wonderful feeling. Now, one thing that I noticed with Veil of Time is your stories are deeply saturated in historical references. What degree of research do you pursue when you go into writing a story? Or let me ask this, are you a history buff? Did that just come naturally when writing this?
Yes, I'm a lifelong history nut, is what my son calls me. So I love history to the point if there was something, if I could do whatever I wanted to, it would be teach history. And so I kind of intertwine my love of history and my love of vampires. That way when you read my stories or even my short stories or anything else I'll ever write, people are going to learn as they read. I write my characters into real historical situations that really happened.
All right. And with Velatime, as I was reading it, I kind of felt that perhaps some of the characters, because you go into some great character development here, what character do you relate to the most in your book?
The main character, James Stewart, he has a lot of my characteristics. And the heroine, Claire, is also part of me. So both of them have me mixed in with them, from their mannerisms to the way they respond to stuff. So really a lot of it is me.
Okay. And with when you were writing the main characters, did you ever feel vulnerable at any time when writing this, such as you were scared that perhaps you were putting too much of yourself out there, or did you feel pretty safe because the characters are fictional and you're kind of hiding behind that wall of the reader not knowing if this is really your emotions or if it's just a fictional character? Did you feel safe or insecure when putting yourself out there like that?
No, I feel pretty secure. You know, they know it's a story and you know, there's life and there's fiction. So, yeah, I didn't worry about that at all.
All right. Now, this is a question, and I'm just kind of, I've been curious about it for a while. What did your son think about your books after he read them? What was his first response?
Honestly, I was halfway through writing Veil of Time before I even let him or my husband know I was writing. Now, my husband supported me after he found out about it. You know, I was scared they would, you know, wouldn't like it, but he has been supportive from the day he found out. Now, Cody never has read either one of them. To be truthful. No, he has not. He says he's proud of me, which I know he is, but he hadn't picked up one of them. And, you know, if he don't want to, that's fine with me. You know, he's still going to support me regardless. One day he will read it, though, because he's going to get curious.
Oh, yeah.
Why not my,
when you have something that's... Oh, mm-hmm. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, I know my wife doesn't read any of my stuff until it comes out on Kindle. She's like, I'll read it when it's done, when it's on Kindle.
Renee proofreads mine, and he'll highlight the mistakes. That way I can fix them. And I have a friend in Vicksburg. She also proofreads everything I do because I get to writing so fast. I make a lot of mistakes or something don't make sense. So they check it for me.
My family and friends,
like, they'll
read it.
I'm sorry,
go ahead,
Sayla. No, that's right. I was just saying that's awesome because, like, my family and friends, like, they'll read stuff if I put it, like, physically in their hands. It definitely, like, it has to be finished and, like, I have to, like, physically force them. And then they like it, but it's, like, the kids don't quite get that they can read it before then.
No, my husband, Renee, actually came up with the title for Deadless that's in Southern Haunts. I wouldn't have known what to name the demon. It would have took me weeks to come up with the name, and it just popped out of his head. So that's how I got the title to the short story, was from him.
And the humor of the story works with that name. And you did say something that I wish so many new authors would take into consideration. You said that when you write, you just write. You get it out of you. There's eras and so on and so forth until the edit comes in. And what you did was, as a new author, you broke that wall that so many new authors have a hard time of doing, because I'm faced with quite a few people that come up to me at cons or at book signings, and they say, oh, I have this really great story, and they explain it out. And they never finish the story in a written form because they're constantly going back editing before they complete the whole story. And so it just, it takes so much longer for anything to come about in that way. And a lot of times if you go about that process of writing a little bit, editing over it, and then keeping doing that over and over and not progressing in the story, it can also frustrate the author where they decide just to give up on it, which I have unfortunately seen that before. Now, as far as conventions go, you have actually had quite a few successful signings, am I correct?
Yes.
Okay. What was the last signing that you did?
February the 15th. I was at Boutique de Vampire, the vampire store in the French Quarter in New Orleans, and had pretty good turnout.
There's a vampire store in the French Quarter in New Orleans.
Yes, yeah, it's called Boutique
de Vampire. Michael, get the car.
I know. Road trip.
Yes, it's on St. Anne. It's on St. Anne in the 700 block of St. Anne in the French
700
Quarter.
Block of St. Anne. Okay, I'm putting it into my GPS right now.
I was going to say, get the GPS, come down and pick me up on your way down there. We are going.
He will love it.
Your OnStar representative.
Yeah. I'm planning on going back down there around October sometime. So maybe. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Hey.
Well, that sounds like a store I could literally spend forever in.
Yes. Yep. Yeah, definitely.
Yep.
All right, I'm interested in how the store appeared. Like, was it a typical bookstore, but it was just regarding vampires? What was it like there?
No, it's a the store's owner's named Marita, and she really has a good setup going. This is a lot of her stuff is homemade crafts that people make for her. And all of it revolves around vampires. She does have a big section of the store for vampire books. Anybody that's written one, she'll let you. And all the books she has in the store are signed copies. Anything from lesser-known authors to Anne Rice. So.
Oh, wow.
But she has a lot of neat stuff in there.
Steven, sounds like we need to get her some copies of Vampires Don't Sparkle.
Okay.
Oh, yes,
definitely.
I wish I had known about that anthology y'all put together. I wish I had known about it. I sure would have pitched in.
Well, Michael may do a part two someday. Who knows?
Vampires still don't sparkle.
No, mine do not sparkle either, and they actually kill people.
There you go.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's one thing about Veil of Time. You were able to present it very beautifully, but at the same time, you didn't shy away from the bloodshed, which I absolutely love. And I just wish that we could get more vampire books like that again. And I say we all go on a road trip. I think that I could supply the snacks and gas and all that good stuff road trip.
Yep.
Okay.
Now, Do you plan to always write about vampires, or do you have some other subjects that you would care to write about?
I have one completed book. It'll be part of a trilogy. It's on a different set of vampires, but right now I am working on what will be a series on witches. So I'm going to go a different avenue with this book. It'll be a lot of witchcraft, spells, time travel, control of the elements, everything. So, again, I will be writing historical figures into this story, too.
Well, I was gonna ask you, is it going to be centered around Salem, or is it going to be more regional?
They are from our area, Texas, Louisiana, Mississippi area. But when they are able to travel, they're going to go to different places through time, and Salem is one of them because it turns out they will be direct descendants of the Salem witches.
Nice.
And we are also going to write Marie Laveau into this one, too. So we will go to New Orleans.
Now, you have my money there.
Now,
I know that you submitted to Southern Haunts 3, and that one is going to be our witchcraft anthology. And you had submitted a story regarding the Yazoo City Witch. And you had said that you had an experience at her grave. Could you tell us about that?
I have the ability to go to a grave and get on it and more or less tell you how the person died. And I can tell you that this woman was lynched and beaten to death from what I suffered on her grave. But she is chained in her grave, and actually I broke the chain with my bare hands, April of 2012. Of course, I put it back together and tried to make it look like it was never broken to begin with so nobody would know. But the legend was if her chain was ever broken, she would be released from the grave and she would burn Yazoo City. And that actually happened in 1903. So once again, her chain is broken. And I did a story about the circumstances of how she was lynched and what happened to her.
Awesome. I can't wait to read that one. We have a little superstition at Southern Haunts, which is we do not read any of the submissions until all submissions are received as of the deadline date. So I am very excited to see that. Now, for your story in Southern Haunts 2, you had contributed Deadless, and what were the inspirations for that piece?
Well, the guidelines were a demon story, and me being from Mississippi, what demon story is more famous than Robert Johnson at the Crossroads?
Yeah, love that one.
Yes.
Yeah. So that's what Deadless is. Deadless is the Crossroads demon. And he refers to Robert Johnson, you know, as an example to the guy that does go to the Crossroads, my main character, Chad. So it's just a legend that people from Mississippi still tell to this day, and that supposedly happened in 1929. So it's been going around for a while.
Now, this kind of falls into the subject of what we've kind of been tiptoeing around here, such as you go into graves and feeling what the deceased individual experienced. What are some of your interests outside of your hobbies, like regarding the paranormal and so forth?
For fun, I like to visit any historical place, you know. I like to go to old graveyards. I like to go to famous graveyards. Let's see. I don't shop. You know, I'm not the ordinary female, so I don't really spend money. I don't like going anywhere except places like that. I do like to travel and work in my haunted spots in my travel.
Now, when you say work in your haunted spots, how do you feel that working in a haunted spot, when it comes down to writing, how do you feel that it affects your work? Do you feel like perhaps you have a guardian or a different entity there with you, assisting you with your writing?
Honestly, everywhere I work is haunted because mostly I do ERs, and all of them are haunted.
Yes. No shortage of restless spirits there.
None. Not even the one this is the first time I've not worked ER since 2008. I'm in a little small surgical hospital now. I needed a break from ER. And even that is haunted. But it don't bother me. I write when I get the urge to write, and sometimes I will have a block for months, and then sometimes it just comes. So the ghosts, they don't bother me.
Now, to get in the mindset of creating your books, I know that you had just mentioned that you like to be in haunted areas for further inspiration. What are some other things that you might do to get in the mindset to write? Like, do you try to listen to music or meditate? Do you go for a walk before you sit down at the computer and start typing?
When I get ready to write a book, I know how I want it to start. How I want to start, and I know how it's going to end, is getting there in the middle part that I have to work out. And I seem to get my best ideas right before I go to sleep. Now, I guess because your mind is clear at that time, and then there's no interference, and that's when the biggest ideas pop in my head.
Yeah, and I've noticed that with quite a few authors. And, I mean, feel free to jump in, Sayla, Michael, or Stephen. Mm-hmm. But it's like personally with me, and I think I know what you're speaking about here, it's like you go through the entire day, you get inspired from things that happen throughout the day, and then you kind of craft that over into the art of
mm-hmm.
what you've experienced.
Yeah.
Well, I tend to be more inspired almost in the morning because I'll be trying to write all day long and in the evening and you know nothing will come to me and I'm just like stressing out over I know what I want to have happen but I can't find the word to do it
mm-hmm.
and then I'll just say well I'll put it down and just go to bed. And then I'll go to bed, and when I wake up the next morning, it's all there.
Yep.
So
I
think my mind just continues while I'm sleeping to just work it out.
You need to percolate. I'm not like I feel like I write more in the afternoon or evening, so that's when I can actually have time. And unless like when I'm during the off season for things, I may have time during the early afternoon or morning or whatever. But I get into this rhythm, like I feel like my brain is constantly clicking all the time, and I'm always, like, kind of looking around for stuff I can use and just sort of letting things happen. But it kind of, like, especially, like, if I'm doing mundane tasks or something, I feel like it's building, and the scene is sort of shaping up in my head, and it just builds and builds and builds. And probably kind of like what you do when you're asleep, Mike. It's just, for me, it, like, happens during daily tasks, and, like, by time I sit down or whatever, then it just, like, all pours out or has to come out. And sometimes that works really well, and other times, like, I'm so, like, ready to write the scene, it almost, like, it gets, like, constipated or something, so I have to sort of calm down and let it just flow out.
Right.
And I have to agree with late at night. It's late at night is the only time when everyone else is asleep and they will leave me alone.
Yeah.
If I try to do anything in the middle of the day, I might as well just give up halfway into it.
Sometimes I have to go to YouTube and find the scene from The Shining where Jack Nicholson is saying, okay, whether you hear me typing or you don't hear me typing. And I just play that for them and they get the idea.
It's like I need that sign to go on my library room door just to remind people. But of course, the library room door faces the living room, and I do have some relatives that come over that are, you know, not really so open-minded. So I'm afraid to see what their response would be to that.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Who knows? It might be worth a shot. I'll give it a try one day, maybe.
it'll be a conversation piece.
That it definitely will be. Perhaps I should wait a little closer to Thanksgiving or Christmas to do this.
Yeah, there you go.
Now,
Linda, who are some of your favorite authors? Like, who did you grow up reading? What just really got your mind going when it comes down to literature?
Besides you, my favorite.
Okay, she's,
would be,
She's in the anthology now.
Yeah, yeah. But you know, I'm still just I'm still accepting this. Like, oh yeah, I'll take it.
I'm like you, Edgar Allan Poe. He's at the top. I like Hawthorne. Actually, been to his grave. Oh, and Poe too. You know that. My favorite book probably in the whole world, and one I've already told my son to make sure I'm buried with, is The Count of Monte Cristo. Dumas.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, that's a classic.
Yeah. It's one of my favorite books of all time.
Yeah. So those are my favorite ones.
You know, I could honestly see how some of that work did inspire you the way you write. Now, what is it about The Count of Monte Cristo that just it just sticks with you? What is that element that keeps you returning to it?
Well, I read it once a year, and he does exactly what I would do. I mean, he just gets them back, but he takes his time and he thinks it through. But I would have handled it exactly the same way. Yeah, I mean,
there's
just
so many levels to that story too.
Yeah, just the way he works it out, you know. Mm-hmm. He couldn't have written it any better.
No. Well, that was based on, like, a true story, too.
Yeah, it's just, I just love it.
Well, I love books that you can read again and again and again, and each time you read it, you get something new out of it.
Yeah, I like Poe. I mean, everybody knows The Raven. Yeah, my favorite is Telltale Heart and Annabelle Lee.
I love that.
And those are the two that I like the most. I mean, all his stuff is okay, but those two I can read over and over and over.
Yeah, Telltale Heart. I love Black Cat.
Yes.
Yeah.
I like Follow the House of Usher too.
Yeah, that one's okay too. Yeah.
And Cask of Amontillado.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, that was a great one. I had ended up reading that when I was in junior high, and it was the first time that we had ever read something that dark in school, and I'm like, all right, I'm starting to like this now.
Yeah, we went on, like, a field trip somewhere, and they did, like, a bunch of, like, one, like, really short stories as one-act plays, and, like, they did The Telltale Heart, and, like, for something that was so, I mean, I would probably, like, see the same version now and be like, this is nothing. But, like, 12 or 13, they just kept building and building and building on it. I mean, it didn't show anything graphic at all, but it was just so intense. It was phenomenal.
Yeah,
I still remember that. Yeah.
My son.
And Telltale Heart is the psychology behind it.
Mm-hmm.
The psychology behind that and Count of Monte Cristo,
yeah.
I'm sorry, that and Cask of Amontillado, both of those I was, like, just floored with the psychology.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you never believe someone who starts off saying, you know, I'm not insane, no matter what you may believe, I'm not crazy.
Yeah.
You know, I've met people like that, and it tends to be the exact opposite.
Right.
It's the people that don't know they're crazy that's crazy. If you always have a doubt, you're not.
Well, and that actually, you know, affected me. I did a story where I wrote it originally in first person. And when I wrote it in first person, it was a dead giveaway that the person was insane. And so then I went back and I changed it to third person, and then it was more of a shock at the end when you find out that they were. Because, you know, everybody, it's, you know, and I credit Telltale Heart with that, is that, you know, it's like the unreliable narrator. It's like nobody believes what they're saying when it's the first person and they're telling you something unbelievable. You tend to think, well, this person's crazy. Whereas if you do it third person, where it's more objective and outside a little bit, it's easier for to lull people into the idea that maybe it is happening.
And I agree with that. There was a story I wrote in Traumatized, and it was called Live Through This. And I think about the way that I could have maybe crafted it differently in third person versus first person, but at the very beginning of the story, the character is speaking to the reader and is explaining about his love and devotion for this one person who won't love him back. And then the further you read, you discover that the lead character is actually just absolutely insane. And the further you go, the worse it gets. And I think to myself, how different could it have made an impact if I used the third-person perspective there?
Right.
Now, Linda, with your writings, what do you feel is the most difficult character you have created, or who do you feel is the most difficult character you've created?
That would be a character I named after my husband, Renee. He is in the next vampire book I've written called The Cabin that is not out. But he was the hardest one to write because initially you think he is just a bad guy, which he is. But then later on you find that he does have this good side to him, but he's still bad. So he had both qualities to him, and you like him and you hate him at the same time. So that was really hard to develop his personality. That would have been the most challenging.
See, I enjoy gray characters. They're ones that aren't black or white, good or evil. They're the same embodiment within one vessel. And I enjoy writing those type of characters. And even though you had a difficulty with this character that you portrayed, did you enjoy doing it while you created him?
Yeah, and he ended up being my favorite in the whole book. And, you know, in fact, and this is the one I plan to make a trilogy of, and he will be more of a focus in the second book of the trilogy. So, and it was just like with Fall into Darkness and Veil of Time. When I wrote Veil and I finished it, James, I liked the character so much I had to go back and write the beginning of his story, and that's why I wrote Fall into Darkness, because I liked the guy so much that I had to tell his whole story.
And, you know, that happens quite frequently with main characters. I know, especially with Anne Rice and Lestat, which I heard that she's producing a new book called Prince Lestat, and I can't wait to get my hands on that. But she at one time said in an interview that the author sometimes ends up getting seduced by their characters, where you just can't leave that character behind with one book. You have to write more and more and more.
Yep.
And I know that you said that Veil of Time is going to be a trilogy, but do you think that later in life it could expand out to other volumes?
I don't know if Veil will. I think I'm going to just leave it, those characters, as just a two-part, but the ones I'm developing now, I do want to keep going with those vampires and my witches. I want to make a whole series on them, too. So I'm still in development of both of those.
Do you see a crossover in the future?
I don't know. That would take a lot of thinking. Now, I will tell you, in the vampire trilogy, in the second book, there will be a lot of voodoo in it. And more zombies.
Woo!
Oh, nice. There could easily be a crossover there. That could be tons of fun. I mean, not telling you what to do, I'm just saying that
And my husband, he comes up with some ideas all the time. Have you ever thought about this or this or this? And he gives me ideas all the time, stuff that, you know, it'll take me a while to work it out in my head, but, you know, I do consider a lot of different avenues I could go down. But my son loves zombies. Him and his friends, they've always loved zombies. And so I had to write them into my books, too. So I actually have a werewolf in Veil of Time and Fall into Darkness, but he's more of a animal than a human when he is the werewolf. So.
It's how the werewolf was intended to actually be, where it was human and then wolf. It wasn't the hybrid wolf man.
Yeah, yep, true. And I think I wrote him as one of the few remaining. They had been killed off everywhere but Romania.
Now, I know you said you're working on witches, vampires. Can we ever expect a werewolf series out of you?
I don't know. I'll think about it. I'll have to see what I can work out. I do like that show on Sci-Fi, Bitten. I didn't think I would like it. I've never really been into werewolves, but I like it. So, you know, that's a possibility. I could go down that road.
I haven't seen that one yet. Now,
oh, you would love
with
it.
With all of your travels. I'm sure I would, anything that's related. Now, with all of your travels, I know that you've been to New Orleans a few times. When it comes time just to move to one place, stay there for the rest of your life, settle down, what is the one place you would absolutely love to move to and just stay there?
If I could take New Orleans and set it inside the state of Delaware, I would never leave.
Now, what's with the Delaware?
I have been there twice. This last time I went, we stayed 6 months. It reminds me a lot of Louisiana. The whole peninsula is flat. The people are laid back. But if you want excitement, you have your choice of D.C., Baltimore, or Philly, and they're all within an hour and a half. But there's beaches. I've never been a beach person. My husband would go fish every day, and I would get a blanket and an umbrella, and I would lay under it and read Anne Rice while he was fishing. it's just relaxing, the whole place. You ride down these little roads, and Grandma has a fruit and vegetable stand where you can stop and buy stuff. And the houses are still there from the 1700s. There's so much history. That's what draws me.
Oh, wow. Now, this is going to be a surprise question. And I know that at a few of your signings, I have seen you give palm readings. Are you still doing palm readings?
Yeah, sometimes on the side, if somebody will come up and ask me, I will. Yes. And a little tarot, too, sometimes.
Now, how did you get into those? How long have you been into tarot and palm reading?
I did not know I could read hands until one day I was looking at, I don't even remember how I started, but I didn't know I had a knack for it because I don't know these people. I just say what comes to me, and I had no idea that it was something that would be accurate. So I didn't know I could do it. I don't know where it comes from. And tarot, I figured if I could read your hand, maybe I could read the cards. So I had to learn what the cards were.
And I'm guessing we'll see quite a bit of this in your witch series, right? Like tarot and divination and
yeah.
So forth, correct?
Yeah.
Awesome.
Levitation,
awesome.
Controlling the weather, calling spirits, time travel. Yeah, these will be the two most powerful witches of all time in the end days.
Nice. I cannot wait for you to write it. Well, we are approaching the five-minute mark here, and so I just want to see if there was anything you might want to say or speak about before the show ends tonight.
No, I'm just grateful to be included in the Southern Haunts family. You know, it's a privilege. I'm very lucky to be part of it. Just thank you.
Well, thank you for contributing. And with Southern Haunts, too, I think you're the only story in there that actually has a little bit of humor to it. So that's why you're towards the beginning. It allows people to have a nice little chuckle before they just get whammed in the face.
I'm going to have to read it. I can't wait to get my copy.
Oh, it's beautiful.
And now that,
you can ask
now that we've learned how awesome Linda is, you know, you can definitely look forward to seeing her at Imaginarium, too, I might throw in there, too.
Yes, I will be there. And Bayou Con in Lake Charles in June.
Awesome.
Now, would you give palm readings at either one of those if people approach you at your table?
If they want it, yeah.
Cool. All right, awesome, Stephen. We have a palm reader now.
Yeah. We've got the edge now.
I cannot give you lottery numbers. Yeah,
I
cannot give you lottery numbers, tell you who you're going to marry or how many kids you're going to have.
Well, damn. There goes mine.
All right. Well,
Just before we... before we get ready to wrap up, I do just want to note that I understand you are supposed to have some surgery later this week, and nothing but positive vibes and prayers, nothing but that is going towards you from myself and my family. And I'm sure that you have quite a few people on the Southern Haunts page and Facebook who are also keeping you in their thoughts.
Well, thank you.
Oh, absolutely.
Yes, we're going to get better, so I'm ready to write again. Thank you.
All right.
And
well, we really
did Linda give out her Facebook address, or did I miss it completely?
No. Let's give out the Facebook. We need links.
Okay, let me explain that. When I made that, it was a page, and I'm computer illiterate, so I'm going to have to make an official page for my books, but it's Linda DeLeon Books on Facebook. I am going to change that up. And my website is ldeleonbooks.com.
And let's see, you do share quite a bit of your book information on your personal page as well. Could you tell us what name people can find you under for the personal page?
Linda Kreisel DeLeon. And Kreisel C-H-R-I-C-E-O-L. It's my maiden name. It's a Louisiana name. There's not many of them.
Well, I'm glad you finally said your middle name, well, your other name there, because I was like, okay, so how do I say this? I've wondered for years, but thank you for letting me know now.
Right.
I am glad
you
did that, because I wondered the same thing.
Yep.
It's simple after you learn it, huh?
It is, yeah. It's a Louisiana thing, right?
Yep. Yep, it sure is. When you see the R-I-C-E in the middle, that'll tell you how to say it.
Yes. All right, well, I just want to say thank you so much for coming on here with us tonight. And as I said, I know that you had a very busy schedule this week, especially with the surgery coming up. And we just really appreciate you being with us tonight.
All right, thank you for having me. All right,
yeah,
thank you.
Yeah, definitely loved having you.
Oh, thank you.
And definitely going to have you back. Definitely going to have you back on the show for sure. So, thank you.
Let me know when.
Will do.
And,
I guess the next time I see you is Bayou Con.
No, you'll see me before then, Cody's graduation.
Oh, yeah, that's right. That's right. All right, well, I'm sorry. What were you going to say, Stephen? Didn't mean to cut you off there.
Oh, it's okay. No, I was just going to give a quick shout-out for next week's show because we're actually going to be staying on the home front and kicking it old school. We're going to be having Sayla on the hot seat, and she's gonna have to sail away with us next week as a guest. So.
All right. Up to the challenge.
Celebration.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a story about that. We'll have to tell.
So that is our show coming up next week, which is going to get crazy. But, yeah, thanks a lot for coming, Linda. And, yeah, definitely look forward to having you back and love the Southern Haunt stuff you've done.
Thank you.
All right. And I guess on that note, to all the writers out there, happy writing. Produce, 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 and put yourself out there.
Good night, everybody.
Night, everybody.
Night.
Good night, everyone.
Night.